You're listening to a podcast presentation of Hillside Foursquare Church in Reno, Nevada. I want to start with, we're talking today about enlarging our soul through grief and loss as part of our Emotionally Healthy Spirituality series. We're going to be in Matthew 5 and Isaiah 52 and 53. But I want to start with this. I want you to just close your eyes for a second. I want you to think of three stories or three incidences that have led to sorrow or loss or tragedy in your life. And just think for a second, what are those things? How did they impact your life? Now think for a second. How did you respond when you experienced that loss, when you experienced that tragedy, when you experienced that point of grief and sorrow? Now think, why did you respond the way that you responded? Who taught you to respond that way? How were you trained or not trained to respond to the grief, to the loss, to the tragedy? Just think on that for a second. You can open your eyes. Anybody besides me, you did not have any difficulty identifying at least one or two things that show up? Yeah. Happy Pastor Appreciation. You're welcome. As we start with, think of something that really marked your life for the bad way, okay? Okay, God bless you. Enjoy your day. That's not it. But every single one of us is going to endure grief and sorrow and loss. And yet, how we respond to that is very, very different. And for some, we're going to get into a little bit later on different ways that we grieve and why we, what may be influencing that. But I wanted us to be thinking about, because especially as people who belong to Jesus, it can almost seem like we're not exhibiting faith if we fully express our grief or fully express our sorrow or fully express the pain that we're experiencing. And we're very tempted, especially as Western Christians, to immediately want to jump to the promise of the end. You know, we're going to see them again in heaven someday. Or, you know, God works all things together for the good of those who love him and are called according to his purposes. And we can quote Bible verses always. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice. But what about in the middle of the mess? Well, we're going to talk today about how God uses the losses that we've experienced. He uses the grief that we've gone through. He uses the tragedies of our life to enlarge our souls. He is not the one that's causing us pain, but he is the one who will never waste our pain. He will work in us to draw us closer to him, to reveal more of himself to us, reveal more of ourselves to us so we can be becoming the best versions of ourselves that we can be. Matthew chapter 5, verse 4, it's in the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus quotes a blessing. He says, "Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted." Mourning is a promise of blessing. That almost seems like it needs to have a question after it. So you're saying, if I'm mourning, I'm going to be blessed. And Jesus says, yes, that is the case. And why is that? Because he meets us in the middle of that. Now, the word mourn here means to wail or to lament. And the word for comfort is to be consoled, to be encouraged, to be strengthened. And it makes me wonder, okay, if there's mourning and it's followed by the blessing of God, what happens to those who don't mourn or grieve or process loss? Most of the time, what ends up happening is people end up crippled or stuck in a spot that they never get past. And that could be a hamster wheel that goes around and around. We never quite get past it. Years and years ago, Joni and I had just moved into a duplex. So it would have been 1990. We had left our 400 square foot mansion apartment and moved into this massive two-bedroom, you know, 800 square foot duplex. As we're living in there, I went out to get the mail, which I hate it when the mailbox is not by your house because you have to go out and you run the risk of running into humans. And I ran into a lady out there and she was crying. And I said, "Hi." And she says to me, "You know, I'm just grieving the loss of my son." And she's proceeded to pour out her heart. And I'm, you know, having lost my brother, I mean, I feel when you've lost someone like that. I've seen my parents go through grief. And as I'm trying to, you know, ascertain what's, it's like, I've never been able to get past, you know, his death. And it's, I feel like I've just been in the same spot for so long. And I'm thinking she's going to tell me, you know, it happened last year. And she goes to tell me, no, you might remember in the summer of 75, he was swimming in this lake. I think it was Washoe maybe, and he drowned. And I'm thinking 15 years down the road, and she identifies as being in the exact same spot as she was at that point. When we don't mourn or grieve, we don't have the opportunity to move forward. I intentionally use the word move forward. Because moving on from loss, especially loss of a loved one, is so difficult. And the thought of leaving that one behind, that's not what God has for us. But he does want us to be able to move forward in the things he has for us. In Luke chapter 9, verse 23 through 25, Jesus says, if anyone wants to come after me, he must deny his selfish ambition, take up his cross daily, and follow me. He says, anybody who wants to lose their life, or anybody who wants to hold on to their life, will lose it. Anybody who wants to lose their life for my sake will find it. And what we see is in loss, God always works bringing life to us, resurrection, but it has to come after death. And we cannot just talk about it. It's something that we have to live as well. I'm going to read a passage in Isaiah that prophesies about Jesus and what Jesus was going to be like, the Messiah. And specifically, he's referred to as a man of griefs and a man of sorrows. So let's go ahead. Let's look at Isaiah chapter 52, verses 13 through chapter 53, verse 11. Oops. Let's go. Yes. Okay. See, my servant will act wisely. He will be raised and lifted up and highly exalted. Just as there were many who were appalled at him, his appearance was so disfigured beyond that of any human being, and his form marred beyond human likeness. So he will sprinkle many nations, and kings will shut their mouths because of him. For what they were not told, they will see, and what they have not heard, they will understand. Who has believed our message, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? He grew up before him like a tender shoot and like a root out of dry ground. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by mankind, a man of suffering and familiar with sorrows, familiar with pain. Like one from whom people hide their faces, he was despised, and we held him in low esteem. But surely he took up our pain, he took up our griefs, he bore our suffering, and we considered him punished by God and stricken by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions and crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was on him, and by his wounds we are healed. We all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us has turned to our own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity, the sin of us all. He was oppressed and afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. And he was led like a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before its shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. By oppression and judgment he was taken away, yet who of his generation protested? For he was cut off from the land of the living, for the transgression of my people he was punished. He was assigned a grave with the wicked and with the rich in his death, though he had done no violence, nor was any deceit in his mouth. Yet it was the Lord's will to crush him and cause him to suffer. And though the Lord makes his life an offering for sin, he will see his offspring and prolong his days, and the will of the Lord will prosper his hand. And after he has suffered, he will see the light of life and be satisfied. By his knowledge, my righteous servant will justify many, and he will bear their iniquities. Jesus, the man of sorrows. Every single thing that we can experience when it comes to loss, when it comes to grief, when it comes to sadness, when it comes to death, Jesus went through as well. He did not go through life as Mr. Happy-Go-Lucky, never experiencing any trouble. He went through life and experienced the same things we experience. Most likely, early in Jesus' life, he lost his father. Okay? Jesus was rejected and thought to be crazy by his family. Jesus was maligned, and people talked badly about him. They ripped on him for his reputation. He was the good things he did were attributed to the devil. People who were the religious leaders of his day got together with political opponents of Jesus to attempt to plan and eventually execute Jesus's murder. He was well acquainted with what it means to lose. And he can identify with everything that we identify with. In Hebrews chapter 4, it talks about how we can boldly go before God's throne of grace and receive what we need in our time because our Savior is intimately aware of the same types of struggles that we have gone through and that we feel. These scriptures that we just read over are tied to sin and to the wrong in the world and to brokenness and our need for a Savior, a need for salvation. Jesus endured punishment that should have been mine. It should have been ours. And instead, he took it in himself on the cross, that anybody who would put their trust and faith in him would have their sins paid for and have their sins forgiven. In John chapter 1, it talks about how in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And it's referring to how Jesus came fully human, yet was fully God. And if I was him, which I'm glad, and everyone in the world is glad I am not, but if I had been, I would have wanted to opt out of certain human experiences. I'd like the fun, enjoyable football Sunday, you know, chilly in the afternoon, the whole pain, hurt, betrayal, abandonment, temptation into sin, abandoned by my family. I don't want that one. But as Jesus went through the things he went through, he identified with what we identify with. And as a result, he is able to bring us comfort and give us peace in the middle of it. He experienced the sadness, the crying, withdrawal, being greatly moved deep in the heart of his being. And yet as he was experiencing those things, we read about that in the gospel, he was fully present and he grieved well. And he created a pathway that we can really look at and follow him as we follow him each day and grow in discipleship. There's lots of different levels of loss that we experience. And most of the time we want to get through it as fast as we can so we can start something on the other side. I was having a conversation with a friend a while ago, and they had lost their wife, and it had been probably, 6 to 8 weeks, and the individual said something to the effect of, "I just got to find another woman." And I was like, I understand where you're coming from with that, but 6 to 8 weeks. I'm not the person who's been assigned by Jesus to say how much time is adequate to pass after you've lost your spouse before you can start looking. I question. It's like, are you sure you've kind of wrestled through the loss of this person you spent the last X number of years with? And he says, it's too hard. It's too hard to be going through and working on that stuff. So I figure what I really need to do is I need to move on, get a new relationship, and just kind of go forward from there. I said, I would encourage you, go as slow as you can, because you'll probably find somebody, but all the stuff that you're working through right now or not working through right now will come back to you. Like credit card interest, we can give numbers on the interwebs to people, to the Amazon, okay? We can give numbers, and they will send stuff to our house, sometimes by drones. They'll fly it and drop it off on your front porch, and you can think this is wonderful. But at some point, if you've used a credit card to pay for this, you're going to get a bill and they're charging interest. I can remember when we were just getting started in our marriage, we could find a credit card with interest, introductory of 0% or 2.99%. And we don't really do credit cards now, but I was looking because we were told, your credit score is going to go down because you don't have enough potential debt. It's like, so I need to get more potential debt so I could be seen as a better, okay. Yeah, this is backwards. But I'm looking at it, it's like an introductory rate of 29.99%. It's like, the credit card bill that comes due later, you're going to end up paying way more than you want to in a bad situation. And if we don't grieve in our current state, in the places where we are, what we end up doing is we're pushing this to a spot until it will come up and it will show up and need to be grieved. So the different levels of loss, what kind of things need to be grieved? What kind of losses need to be paid attention to? I'm going to throw some things out there. Our hopes and dreams, things that we will not do or accomplish. Those are hard because at some point we always put in our, we have got this spot in our head that says, okay, I may not have accomplished X by now, but there's going to come a time when I'm going to be able to do this. We think, it may not be next week, but it's going to happen. It'll be maybe next year. And then we reach the time where it's like, This is probably never, ever going to happen. We can grieve that. Another thing, as we grow older, as we age, we see our bodies change, and we have to grieve it so that we don't spend our entire life attempting to get back to an age and a way that we look that we're never going to be able to accomplish anyway. My friend Chuck that I was mentioning earlier said one of the biggest challenges in American society is people not being able to be the age that they are. And it's like somehow who they are at 51 is not
good enough or comparable to what they were when they were 30 or when they were 40. And so they work as hard as they can to try and get back. We cannot get back. One of the biggest challenges I've experienced in the last couple of years has been I did a complete destruction of my rotator cuff. I don't recommend it. I'd like to say it was through jiu-jitsu, and that's where I completed the destruction. But it started by falling down in my bathtub, which is a really glamorous way when people say, how'd you hurt your arms? Like, bathtub. I was in the bathtub, and I fell down and hit my arm. And coming out of the surgery, the doctor said, you're going to be able to recover. You're going to be able to play catch with your grandkids. But you're never going, and she gave me this list of the things I'm never going to be able to do. And it wasn't like she says, you're never going to pitch for the Giants. I said, I wasn't pitching for them anyway. But she says, no, you're never going to be able to be a weightlifter. You're never going to really be the person that if people are moving, they can call you because you're going to help them lift stuff. And it's like, seriously? That's never going to be. No. And most recently, I was on a trip to Virginia to go spend time with Chuck for a few days. And while I'm on the plane, everybody's masked up and huddled in their little spot. And this lady comes by and she's got her carry-on bag. And she looks at me and she says, my bag's really heavy. Can you help me lift it? And I said, no. And she said, but you look big and strong. And I said, it's broken. It doesn't work. And she's like, if you don't want to help, you don't have to help. I was like, okay. And I'm not trying to be bad, but it's like, I could get up there and try and stand. I'd already tried to lift my own bag, and I've got like a 2-pound bag, and I try and lift it up over my head, and it's like, there's nothing there. There's no rotator, there's no muscles, there's nothing. And, to kind of add fuel to the fire, the woman in the seat next to her happens to be like a 15-year-old girl, stands up and whips that thing up on her shoulders and stuffs it in there, kind of looks at me in a nice smug way, and it's like, my shoulder didn't hurt, I'd smack you. You know, it's bad. But I've had to grieve that I cannot do things that were very important to me anymore. And it's not you just need to rehab harder. No, at some point, there's nothing to rehab. There's nothing there. And so I can either be upset about it or I can mourn it. Other types of things, transitions, when we experience a transition, when we move, getting married, having family, children growing up. Who would have thought children growing up would be painful in a good way? Okay, I can remember when our son Joey was 16 and he's saying, I just can't wait to move out of the house. And I just can't wait to move on. And when he did finally, it was one of those things where he was getting to experience something he's always wanted to do. And yet Joni and I were sad and we cried because he's moving. But fortunately, he moved back in. So that was really nice. When we leave one phase and go to another, there's times, and in 2008 when the housing crash took place, Hillside lost 60% of the people who attended due to job loss, job moves, going to school. You know, it was one of those times where it was like this entire peeling back of more than half of our church. And it was so painful because it wasn't like people said, we hate this church and we're having difficulty with the pastor. This isn't where we're supposed to be. It's more of a, our house got foreclosed and we're moving in with family in Sac, or moving in with family in Denver, or moving in with family in New Hampshire, or wherever we happen to be going. And they're leaving. And at some point, we're looking around the sanctuary, and it's like, what happened to the people that we knew and we loved? And it was painful, and we grieved it, and we grieved it as a church. Other types of loss, the level of loss that I would classify as catastrophic, when we experience death or divorce, an affair, war, terror, disaster, aka 2020, sickness, health issues, all these things, they can become much more traumatic. And I want to just take a second, because right now in 2020, the entire world is experiencing the same thing we're experiencing in some way, shape, or form. And there are places that maybe it's not as severe, and there's places where it is 10 times worse than what we're seeing. In that, we have the opportunity to know that God is not going to waste the pain, and he's going to work inside of us as we work through the catastrophe and try to think, Lord, where is it that you're at work? Other types of loss, the silent losses, losses that people don't necessarily talk about. Infertility, miscarriage, abortion, stillbirth, abuse, the loss of innocence. Other times it's losses about what we think about who God is and what God does. about church. Sometimes it's the things of what God does. Maybe we come to the spot in our life where things happen. We are confronted with the thought that everything I thought I knew about who God was and what he does was completely changed. One of the times I remember this, it was in mid-June, probably would have been about the 12th or 13th of June, 1990. My brother was going to die just a couple days later, did not know that, and we'd been believing and standing for God to heal him. And I know God is the healer. I've seen him heal people. I've had him heal me. And I was down talking with my brother, and it was obvious he knew things were bad, and I had asked him about a couple of things, and he just shared, you know, these are their experiences of, you know, my liver's dying, and it's got cancer in it, and that's why things are happening the way that they are. And I left the downstairs room where he was in his hospital bed, and I went upstairs, and I went outside my parents' house, which is kind of overlooking extreme North Carson, and I stood out there in the driveway, and I just cried. And it was not the cry of, like, even now where it's present and I'm feeling it. It was the cry that you cry from the bottom of your feet. And the hardest part for me in the middle of all of it was I knew God could heal, and even more, I knew he was there. I sensed his presence. It was every time I was in the room with my brother, it was obvious God's presence is here, but there was no healing. And I did not understand it. I was recognizing I need to be willing to exchange what I have believed about God and what he will do and how he will do it for something that's not yet here, but I know he's good, but I don't know how this is going to be good. Does that make sense? So one of the most important things is that we would be people who are willing to engage in grief, and as a church, that we'd be willing to grieve. Peter Scazzaro said something to the effect, he's the writer of the Emotional Healthy Spirituality book, he said, the church that doesn't grieve lives in a pattern of unhealth and denial. You will grieve splits, church splits, people moving, people transitioning. You will grieve changing. You will grieve church plants. You will grieve when you send people out to minister in another spot because it's healthy and it's right. When people go, when people are gone, we miss them. When things that we have grown used to and come to rely upon are no longer happening, it's very difficult to figure out, now, what are we supposed to do? What's it look like to stand in faith when everything that I've leaned upon to help me sustain my faith is missing? 2020 has been that for me, has been that for us. This is not me complaining or, you know, saying poor me. This has been the hardest year ever that we've ever experienced in pastoring, and I know in living. And there's so many things and so many people that I miss so much. And I don't get to see because either they don't feel comfortable coming back to church yet or for health reasons, whatever reason, we have not been able to see each other. And I've missed so many things and missed so many opportunities. I think of Sadie Johnson was almost a year old when I finally got to hold her. Justin Jeske, he's 8 months old now. I love Nick and Kirsten. I haven't been able to see them. There's lots of stuff like that. And I can't just go, everything's fine, because it's not. But then what are we supposed to do? Well, I'm glad you asked, because I've got a message to share with you. How we grieve is largely determined by a couple things: our family of origin and our culture of origin. We learn what is okay, what is proper, what is expected, what is accepted. Is it okay within our family of origin to express pain, to process pain, to be hurt? Or are we supposed to just be strong in the Lord and the power of his might? Which is a way of saying, we're not going to talk about it, we're not going to do anything about it, because there is no death, there is no sting in death. Yeah, we don't grieve as those who have no hope. Those are both very valid Bible verses. But it doesn't necessarily help when you're going through a hard time and you're experiencing loss. Our culture of origin may shape how we engage with grief. One of my favorite examples that Peter Scazzaro uses is with the British. There was a woman who had lost her twin sister, and she decided not to go to the funeral. And she was asked, why aren't you going to go to your twin sister's funeral? And she says, well, she's already dead. So what would be the point? And then Peter shares a story from some of his own family funerals, being the Italian-American families. He said it was not uncommon for family members to throw themselves into the grave as the coffin goes down. Two radically different ways of attempting to grieve. Western society, we are all about control. And the real or perceived being in control of our life and being in control of what's happening. And what we've been finding out over and over again, especially this year, is any semblance or idea that we are in control of anything is out the window. Even as we've ramped up all year to go where we're meeting with only online and having, 10 people maximum in church. And we were so jazzed when we can go to 50. And then for like 3 short weeks, we can up to 250 people. Yes, still with masks and stuff, but that's going to be okay. And then we get back to a stay-at-home 2.0. And it's like, but we were doing good. And now we're going backwards. And that sucks. And I don't like it. I'm going to write my congressman. Like, what can you do? People, when we lose control, we feel like we want to reestablish control. So this is where I believe we see people taking stands of defiance. You can't make me, I'm doing this. And yeah, there's the idea about our personal freedoms and what we can and what we can't do. But there's also, when we throw a fit, we feel like, no, you're not in control, I'm in control. Look what I can do. You can't make me do that. I'm doing this instead. Sound familiar? When we experience loss, or as I like to call them, interruptions to our plans, it gives us a bad idea or a faulty idea about what those interruptions are. Could it be that God is doing something in the world today to do something to our faith? Not that he's attempting to introduce the pandemic to mix things up, but that in the middle of this, he's going to use this for good, to deepen our faith and to move it from cultural or political or other ties and attempt to cause us to be people who drill down and to really dig deep and rely upon him with deep, deep roots, where we truly can live out the love and care and kindness and compassion that he calls his people to do and to be salt and light in everything we do. I can tell you from my experience, when something terrible is happening in the world, God is at work and he's going to use that for good somehow. That's what he's doing. We don't want to feel pain, so we develop ways of kind of deflecting or avoiding. Denial. Selective forgetting, refusing to identify painful reality in us or outside of us. No, I'm fine. It's not that big of a deal. It's merely a flesh wound. It's not that bad. It was bound to happen, and it didn't really do me damage. Somebody says to you, "I hope I didn't hurt you." No, it didn't hurt. I'm fine. I'm tough. God's been preparing me for a while for disappointment, so I'm all right. Minimizing. Yeah, something's wrong, but it's not that big of a deal. I mean, I know going through losing your job and losing your house and, losing your family. It's bad, but, God's with me. Yeah. Blaming others. This is one of my favorites. This is happening because of the fill in the blank. Okay, there's a line. This is going on because this happened. If that hadn't happened, then we wouldn't be experiencing this. One of my favorite things that I've heard so far is when people start blaming, because we elected a Democratic governor, that's why. And it's like, really? Because, yeah, note to self. And it was just, it's like, so do you feel better blaming, saying, it's him? No, for others, it's Mark Zuckerberg. It's the Facebook empire. For others, it's, Jeff Bezos and Amazon. That's why. We look for conspiracy. We go, oh, blaming others. You know what? We blame ourselves. If I had just been more fill in the blank, then this wouldn't have happened, or I'd be able to handle this better. Katie touched on one a minute ago, blaming herself when she says, "I'm an idiot." That's an example of she wouldn't have even been looking to try and have a, like she's pointing her finger, blaming God. It's like, I'm an idiot. It's like, no, you're not an idiot, but it is something that is easier than addressing the reality, because what happens when we're contending for a preferred future and we don't get to see that preferred future? Does that mean we failed? No. It means we're walking in faith. And sometimes when the things that we see are going to, we think God's going to do, he fulfills in a different way. One of the verses that God gave to my brother and to my family while he was suffering with cancer is in the book of Psalms, and it says, he asked for life and you gave it to him. End of days, for always and forever. And we looked at it and said, God's going to heal him. And when he passed away, we're looking at that. How do you reconcile this verse that we knew God gave us with that? And eventually we looked at it and said, he still has end of days with God. It's just not in the way we thought it was going to look him here with us. That doesn't give me a whole bunch of comfort, but it also shows that when we're in certain situations, we may look at them and think we know how things are going to go, and we don't. But God's still faithful, and he's still good. Rationalizing is another common defense mechanism. We make excuses. We offer up justifications. We look at why something is happening. You know, this guy keeps punching walls and getting arrested for throwing fits. Well, he's Irish. You know them. They can't help it. Redheads, they just do their thing. The gingers in the world punching walls. You know, as though somehow he was pushed to the edge. His wife wouldn't, you know, listen to him. That's why he had to punch the windshield. She made him. Basically made him. That's autobiographical, by the way. Another one, intellectualizing. My problems are not that big of a deal, especially when you consider the problems that are happening in other places. You know, first world problems for me. So I guess this suffering that I'm experiencing is bad, but it's not like the people in fill-in-the-blank country. It's not like fill-in-the-blank issue. Then there's the distracting. You know what? It really bothered people. You know what? I heard a really great story the other day. It's like, but we were talking about how you feel from the losses you've experienced. I really feel like the 49ers are going to get beat really badly today by the Saints. What about you? Did you hear the story? Did you hear the story about, and so we distract. And when we really get kind of nailed down on something, we can respond in hostility and anger. Why do you always have to ask about this? Why can't you just let it go? Let it be done. No more. Yeah, it sucks. We're grieving this, but just get over it. Is my blustering causing you to stop questioning me and making me think about hard things? Those are tough stuff. That's the way we can respond. When I write here biblical grieving, please don't think, and this is the only way you can move forward when it comes time to grieve. But in this last week, I've probably shared these three steps at least 10 different times. And a couple of times I had to apologize at the front end. It's like, I'm talking about this week, and so this might be, I don't know if it's going to be applicable to you, but I really am thankful that you're having this situation happen in your life so I can share this with you, because this is the framework I'm using and that I have used and I encourage people to use when it comes to working through grief and loss. With biblical grieving, the things that we can do: pay attention to the pain and the feelings. Do not give in to the opportunity to take a shortcut, to pursue distraction, or to pursue the things that can lead to addiction. Much of the addictive problem that happens in our world today is people looking to avoid the pain that they're experiencing, so they want an escape to take me away. God invites us to put our trust and our hope in him and to pay attention to what we're feeling. When I was going through rehab for my shoulder this most recent time, I did some research. I've done almost 38 months of rehab for different parts of my body over the years. That's 3 years and 2 months I've spent in rehab, which is awesome. I'm a champion. But in that, this most recent time, I'm really wanting to get better. I'm really wanting to get strong. I'm wanting the joint to work. And the woman I was working with, an incredible therapist named Taylor at Nevada Physical Therapy, she says, you need to tell me if your body hurts when we're doing these exercises, and we can find out if this is a good pain, like stretching scar tissue, or if this is a bad pain, stop moving. And I said, no, I just want to push through. And she said, you just had your arm reattached with rubber bands, okay? If it hurts, it means something needs to be paid attention to. And I'm thinking, as she's cranking on my arm, this will be a good sermon illustration one day. Pay attention to the pain. Spend time identifying it. It allows us to process with God and allows him to begin to work in us. In the Psalms, we have over half of the Psalms are Psalms of lament or sorrow or grief. And we hear David says, okay, guys, we're going to do this one. It's Psalm, I think it's Psalm 137 or Psalm 139. And it comes, he says, we're going to sing this song. And it goes in there and says, oh, Babylon, how much we hate you. And we wish that we would have been able to find you and all your mighty men when they were fully grown soldiers, we could have found them when they were babies and just broken their heads open against the rocks. Again, that's a verbatim psalm. David says, let's sing it, everyone. Everyone. It's like, I don't feel comfortable. But it's that kind of raw processing. There's 35 chapters in the book of Job. Job is a man who really is, it's the story of us. He lost everything. But he lost all of his in one day. He lost his family. He lost 10 kids. He lost all of his possessions. His wife is the only thing that didn't leave, and she stayed to kind of antagonize and to poke her finger at him and say, why don't you just curse God and die? For 35 chapters, he's honest. He's transparent. He's verbalizing to God what's going on. And he has three friends that come to spend time with him. And they say, there's really no explanation for what's going on here except you're a sinner, and you just got to find what you got to repent. Otherwise, it's going to happen again. And he's like, I didn't do anything wrong. I was like, oh, I'm pretty sure that's not how it works. Religious people have no space or theology for the mystery, the unknown. Everything has to have a cause and effect. This is why this happens. Sometimes stuff just happens because we live in a broken world. Number two, wait in the confusing in between. We cannot rush through the mess. We have to find a way to wait, to endure, to wait on God. And waiting is not just sitting there twiddling your thumbs. Waiting is active, and waiting is obedient. Waiting is doing what we know we're supposed to be doing. Waiting is being active in the things God's called us to do, but at the same time, not trying to get through the mess, not trying to fix it, but being willing to embrace the silence and solitude to spend time with God so that he can, as we're spending that time with him, he can help us to grow in our understanding of him and our understanding of ourselves. It's an invitation to reject temptation to try and force it just to be better. Oftentimes when somebody's experienced a great grief or great loss, people who are very well-meaning will come up to them and say, how are you doing? They want you to say, I'm doing well. They do not want you to say, I'm having a hard day. Because if you're having a hard day, they don't necessarily know how to deal with that. If you say, I'm doing well, it's, oh, good. Bless the Lord. What if you say, I feel like my lungs have been ripped out my nose with someone's teeth. And I feel like the very essence of who I am has been squished out and all that's left is gall and bitterness. Not going to get asked that question very often unless there's somebody who's willing to say, I'll stand with you. I'll be with you. I'm sorry that this is where you're at. We want to get away from that. Why? Because it's torment and it's torture. But if we try and rush out of it before it's done, the infection can remain inside of us. Anybody ever heard the scripture, I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Morris Chapman. Plans to prosper you, plans not to harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future. Anybody heard that? Isn't that a good promise? So happy. Context for that's not as happy. The people of Israel are being held They're being held captive. My brain is being held. No, the people of Israel are being held captive in Babylon, and they're trying to get back to Israel, and they're making plans. They're packing up stuff, and God says, no, I want you to stay. I want you to buy houses. I want you to plant vineyards because I'm going to keep you here because I'm not done working in you what needs to be worked in you. I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you, not to harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future. The context of the whole thing is, you're not going anywhere for 70 years. Get used to this middle of this in-between. I don't like that. No, this is where you're going to live. We like the, God is going to give me a hope and a future. What he's saying is, wait on me. You can't make this happen on yourself. Psalm chapter 40, I waited patiently for the Lord. He inclined and heard my cry. He brought me up out of the pit and out of the miry clay. I waited. Anybody ever watch the TV show Downton Abbey? Okay. Who, just show me your hands if you've been here. Everybody home? Okay. If you have watched, you'll get this picture. One of the things, especially at the beginning before everything got more modernized and all the people that had titles had to start doing their own laundry, one of the things that really got me was there were people whose job it was to stand around and wait until somebody needed something. They were the lords and ladies in waiting. What does the lady in waiting do? Well, I just kind of wait here until the lady needs something. It's like, so isn't that boring? Well, yeah, it's kind of boring sometimes. I don't always see the purpose, but there's still, once they need something, then I respond to that. It's a good picture of what God asked for us. He said, I want you to wait, and you'll know when it's time, even if it's confusing and uncomfortable. Last of all, number three, let the ashes bring forth the new, because God will build and grow a new thing out of the ashes of the old in his time. We will not be stuck forever. One of the things we talked about earlier is God always brings resurrection out of loss and death. And we cannot have the resurrection of Christ except we have the death of Christ. We cannot have Job's restoration where at one point in a day, we get to see God restores his fortunes. He restores his health. He ends up with another 10 children. His possessions are doubled. He is restored. Is it not the same? I looked at that. I remember reading through that and thinking, man, he lost 10 kids in a day and now he gets 10 new ones. It's not like a kid for kid. It's like a trade. It's like, well, you know, we had 10, got rid of those, got 10 new ones. It's better. No, I'm not saying it's better. It's just different. It's new. God will always bring the new out of the old. He's wanting to do something deep in us. I mentioned this a minute ago. In 2020, let's not waste this opportunity to allow God to do a deep transforming work in our lives and in the life of our church. And I tell you this, I don't know what church is going to look like in a year. I don't know what it's going to look like for us together. I don't know what it's going to look like, but I can tell you this. We are going to be going forward and embracing new forms and new ways of doing things because we are going through a change that we will not be able to go back to March 15th, 2020 ever again. We can't pretend, oh, let's go back to what happened. We can't pretend, oh, let's just do this, let's call this 2020 a do-over year. Reset, that'd be cool. But once it's done, we're going to see something new be birthed out of it. We would be in major, major trouble if we tried to say, once we're able, and health-wise and all the others, no masks and all that, well, let's just go back and do what we were doing. We can't. It's very similar to what happened 9/11 in 2001. Anyone who was there, they know exactly what they went through. They know exactly where they were at the time. And they can't go back and just, let's pretend that never happened. Because when there's a catastrophe in your life, you had those visible towers in New York of, you know, these twin towers, those are gone. In our own life, we've had towers be knocked to the ground. And we can't go back and pretend that they're just there. What's this look like? I don't know. But God will bring new life. One of the things that you can kind of gloss over is in Hebrews chapter 5, it says, Jesus learned obedience through suffering and through what he suffered. And we will learn obedience to God and grow closer to him as we suffer. And God is not causing us to suffer, but he will utilize the suffering that we go through to help us to grow in our relationship with him. And he will do new things. He will do good things. When you're reading through the prophets and you come across the place in Isaiah where it says, behold, I'm doing a new thing. Can you not perceive it? I will make highways in the wilderness and rivers in the desert, things that you have not even begun to imagine, great mighty things that your eyes cannot even see. I'm going to do that. That, I believe, is our 2021 verse. Great mighty things that we have not yet even imagined, God is going to do. Psalm 139, 23 and 24. Each week we end our time with this. Let's read it. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts, and see if there's any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Over and over and over again, we come back to, if I don't know necessarily what's happening here, or even if I think I've got a good handle on what's shaking in my life, I can go to the Lord and I can ask him, would you please search me and try me and know me? And you, Lord, the creator of this being, the one who knit this, the fabric of this being together, please do a work in me to illustrate so I can cooperate with what you're doing and not be someone who's kicking against your direction. God will get his way in my life. In, I believe it's Acts chapter 9, the story of Saul slash Paul as he's on his way to Damascus to go persecute some Christians and to give him the thumbs down and to bring him back and have him tried for heresy. He gets confronted by Jesus and there's this voice from heaven that says, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? It's hard for you to kick against the goads. And the goads are the pointed sticks that you used to drive oxen in the direction you want to go. And so the image was, Saul, I've been calling you, I've been working on you, I've been trying to get your attention for so long, and I've got the goads pointed, I'm trying to direct you this way, and you're fighting it every step of the way. Home slice, it's going to be hard for you to kick against these things. And Saul, Paul, to his credit, says, well, who are you talking to me? He says, it's Jesus, whom you're persecuting. From that moment forward, he did everything he could to cooperate with what Jesus wanted to do in his life. We could be experiencing opposition in our life that has to do with us fighting what God's wanting to lead us and direct us towards. I'm not prophesying that and saying that's in every situation, but sometimes we're heading in a direction that God can't and won't bless because his plans for us are different than that. And he'll let us walk, but he loves us enough to chastise or to discipline us. And discipline is not a bad word. God disciplines those that he loves. When my kids would at times get in trouble, one of the things, especially when they were older, they said something like this. And it was one of those things where it's like, somebody's got a hidden camera here somewhere if you're going to be saying this. They said, you know what? In retrospect, I'm really glad you punished us. I'm really glad we got restricted the way we did. It mattered if we did something wrong. He says, I have so many people, so many friends, who they can do whatever they want and their parents don't say anything. You cared enough to stand up and get in our face. Mom cared enough to go toe-to-toe in the Costco parking lot while Dad's in Germany and called Dad at 3:00 in the morning and says, I don't know what I'm going to do with your son. It's like, I don't know what I'm going to do with your son. You know, that type of a, I don't, thank you. God disciplines those he loves. Let's bow our heads. Lord, there's so many things going on in our world today. There's so many things going on in us individually, in our hearts, in our lives. We ask you, enlarge our souls through grief and loss, Lord. Let us not waste this time, but instead, may we pay attention to the pain that we're experiencing. May we wait in the confusing in between, wait for you to act, and Lord, allow you to birth something new out of the ashes of the old. That we don't have to try and rush through and get something fixed, but that we can just be where we happen to be. And if someone asks us how we're doing, we're not doing well, we can just be who we are and say it. That's not to wallow in misery, but it's to acknowledge, yep, I'm here. Just like the red dot tells us in the proverbial mall, when we look at the map and it says, you are here, we can say, yep, I'm here. I cannot deny I am here right now. Lord, I ask that you would cause your hope and your peace to rise up in our hearts. Lord, an anticipation. We don't know what it's going to look like when you birth the new out of the old, but we know you're doing it. And in the fertilizer that this year has been, Lord, may it cause the seeds that you're planting to grow deep and wide and tall and fruitful. That we can be your hands and feet to be and do what you'd be being and doing if you were walking in our shoes. In Jesus' name. Amen. Last thing I'm going to throw at you. You have permission to mourn. Like Katie was talking about earlier, take time to be quiet, to be silent, to be by yourself. For some of you, that's a big challenge because your house is full. Some of you, it's a big challenge because you don't like the sound of silence. God's inviting you to do that. Say, Lord, what is it I'm supposed to be mourning? What am I not paying attention to? He gives us permission to mourn, to feel and express our grief, etc. Because it is inhuman and unbiblical to not pay attention when we lose. Get that. It is inhuman and unbiblical to not pay attention to our losses. We also cannot forgive what we have not grieved. If we have an area where we're stuck in some unforgiveness, it's a good possibility we have some grief that's attached to that. We have to release that to him. Lord Jesus, I thank you for the privilege of living life with these Hillsiders, people that are in this building, people that are watching from wherever they happen to be watching, people who hear this. I thank you for that privilege. And we ask you corporately to have mercy on us, Lord, to lead us into what you have for us, to develop a depth of character and a strength that goes beyond anything we could have on our own. We trust you. Enlarge our souls in Jesus' name. Amen. Cassidy, got anything you want to share? Okay. Especially as we are a little bit more online right now, we're going to want to take some time at the end of the message to hear from some people. So what do we got today?
Yes. Well, also, I know some people can be a little delayed, so let's give a little time for people to respond. But earlier when you were talking about your friend saying it was too hard to face the grief, Matt Emmons had commented, kind of like, don't be sad, fill it with stuff so you don't have to feel that. Like, that's what the world tells us. And then he said, if we close off all our emotions, we stop letting God speak to us and move us into action and growth. So I thought that was a good one. And then we just, you know, you got some love and appreciation for past appreciation.
Would you please read that out loud slowly? I'll go back and read it later.
And Patty said, thank you, Louis, for such a good message that brings us healing in our souls.
Nice. Well, I want to say this. Thank you to everyone who was here today, to our team leading us, our cafe people, hospitality. Thank you, Hillsiders, that are at home and you're watching and participating. Thank you for continuing to do the hard work in hard times.
Oh, and for everyone out there, we did upgrade our church phone, so now it has battery life. And I will be able to see what you say if you text
that's true.
Something.
Yeah. So I say, God bless you. Enjoy the rest of your day. Let's be positive. Let's be flexible. Let's be resilient. And be looking forward to the things that God is working in us now and that he's going to be bringing as we head into 2021. Right on? Right on. God bless you.
This has been a podcast presentation of Hillside Foursquare Church in Reno, Nevada. You can reach us via email at web@hillside4.org. That's W-E-B @hillside4.org.